All right. Thanks, Don. Orest, it's a bit early in the quarter to provide any guidance on our realized price. Again, in reality, we've seen a lot of volatility in the market in the past year plus. So at this point, we'd only be guessing at what the realized price might be. And to put it in perspective, you may have noticed that since Q2 2010 to now, our realized price has ranged anywhere from the low of 75% to a high of 104%. And it's averaged 92% in that period. So the realized price is really a function of a number of factors, including mine production and sequencing, the timing of vessel arrivals, the performance of the logistics chain. So there is a number of factors that do impact, and as our mines, the four main mines are going into new mining areas, they could be releasing slightly different product mix in the short term. So we need to be aware of that. And again, there is a big range in a volatile market.
Okay. And just quickly, finally for me, the $81 million of costs that you cited at Trail related to these new soil standards, is that a one-time event, or is there implications for higher costs that are moving forward?
Okay, Dale?
Yeah, I think that is that's an allowance, and that'll be executed over the next five to 10 years. That's something that we'll address with the health authority and work with a community-wide, area-wide soil remediation plan. But that's not something that will happen immediately. That's something that's longer term.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Matt Murphy from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Morning. Just had a question on Highland Valley. If you can share some color about 2018 guidance, I guess it's a bit below the lower end of what you'd envisaged for the three-year forward guidance at this time last year. So just some thoughts around that.
Yeah, sure. For Highland Valley in 2018, we're continuing to focus on stripping efforts in the Lornex pit and the Valley pit. So although, you know, at times we enter into higher grade phases of the pit, like we did in the fourth quarter of 2017, we still have to drive some of those pushbacks deeper, and that is the game plan for 2018. We do expect a relatively even quarterly performance based on the current mine plan throughout 2018. And for us to enter into those higher grade zones starting in early 2019. One of the other things that has affected our production plans is the recovery side. As we're into this lower grade feed, both in 2017 and 2018, our recoveries have dropped, and we do expect those recoveries to pick up with higher grades and better processing material as we dive deeper into those pits. So that's something that we're working through. It's progressing as per our plans in 2018 and going forward. And you'll see the three-year guidance that we've given for 2019 and beyond. That'll be a continual increase with that range, and we're quite confident in that going forward.
Okay, so in terms of a recovery assumption beyond 2018, I mean, is it fair to use like an 85% type of something in that range?
Yeah, at times when we get into the very high-grade zones and higher bornite softer material, it can be even higher than that, but in that range would be more normal for the longer term going forward. That's correct.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Rial, I know you don't want to be held to a coal realization range, but the coal pricing so far in the current quarter has been pretty flat. And if your coal split between spot and benchmark remains the same, you should be getting a very good realization in Q1, I would think.
Yeah. So, Greg, I guess it depends on product mix, as I've said, and this is trending back to normal for 2018. The main issue about Q4 is that we had much higher thermal production than usual. Thermal production for us is usually a couple percent of our total production. We're now back to normal levels. This was a one-time event in Q4. So through 2018, we will be back to around 75% of our production as hard coking coal. So that's the same level as previous 2 years. The balance of the production is semi-hard, semi-soft, PCI, and that little bit of thermal that I referred to. Now, things that we need to watch is not only the price level, it's the volatility, and it's also the price differential between those various products. So, for instance, if you look at the price differential right now between semi-hard, semi-soft, and the premium hard coking coals, those differentials are at record levels, and they have been now for probably since December. So, as opposed to an average of about $10 to $12 previous to the big spikes that we've seen in the last year plus, we're now looking at $40 plus. So that has an impact also on overall realization. So there is a lot of moving pieces.
Gotcha. Okay, that's helpful. And just to focus on Neptune, you're going to spend $85 million there this year. Is that a capacity expansion that you're undertaking?
Yes.
By how much?
Who wants to go with that? Do I go in?
Yes, the target is to be in excess of 18.5 million tons per annum, for something around 20 million ton capacity once the expansion is finished.
So how is that going to impact how you direct your coal transport out of BC then? How much will go through West Shore and how much will go through Neptune?
Well, we have our contract with West Shore until March of 2021 at 19 million tons, so we'll clearly honor the contract.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Oscar Capiera from CIBC World Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. So first question on your coal operations. Just want to reconcile your, you know, higher strip after 2019 and the capitalized stripping that we have in 2018. Should we expect those levels to persist, or $390 million in 2018 persist over the next 5 years, or is that declining as well?
Yeah, I can speak to the strip ratio side of it. So the strip ratio in 2018 peaks at 10.5 and then declines and will average out to around 10.1 across the 5 years.
What does the profile look like? Is it front-end loaded, I'm assuming? Or?
Well, 2018 is the peak and then lower after that.
But averaging 10.1 over the 5 years, that's what you said.
That's right.
Okay. And, you know, thank you for providing all the other detail on the CapEx. Now, if, you know, staying with coal, and, you know, let's forget about 2018, but going forward after Coal Mountain is closed, how do you see your coal mix? And you talked about 40% of the sales that are now indexed. I'm assuming the rest is, you know, on the spot market. So how do you, you know, can you help us just put context around your sales mix and what do you expect in terms of realizations?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. We should have Rael just talk through the 40-60 mix and how that breaks out and how to use the word index.
Yeah. Thanks, Oscar. So when you look at our contracts, the proportions have not changed. We still have around 40% of our sales that are priced on a quarterly basis, and that quarterly pricing is the average of the three main price assessments that are published daily. The other 60% is priced on shorter and quarterly pricing mechanisms. So those pricing mechanisms are either linked to price assessments directly, or they're actually negotiated on fixed price. But overall, they still reflect the direction of the price assessments. So I guess you can say that overall, looking at our book, generally it moves with the direction of the price assessments that you see in the market. 40% of it moves on the quarterly, most of it on the quarterly lag by 1 month, and then the other 60% moves up and down with the daily price assessments through the quarter.
Okay, right. Real, that's very helpful. Now, with respect to the mix, the average of the historical average was about 7% of lower quality coals. Is that going to be, below 5% after 2019, or do you still expect to be, closer to 10%?
So, Oscar, I'm not sure where the 7% comes from, but if you look at our hard coking coal ratio, it's around 75%, and it's been at that level for 2017 and the 2 years previous to that. And going forward, we're expecting that we will continue to produce around 75% of high-quality hard coking coal. So no change to that, except, again, what we saw in Q4.
Yeah.
And just for further clarity, what that means, Oscar, is that 75% is the high-quality hard coking coal, and then you get different blends down to that. It's still only about 2% thermal. So, the 7% you're talking about, I don't know if that might have been a few years ago, if there was a year with a higher thermal or something, but the levels we're at have been the same for several years now, and there's no change.
Yeah, and that was basically the if you took the ratio in pricing, so sales. That was about 7%.
Oh, I see. That's right. You're quite right. We used to talk about the average percentage price realization of the benchmark was 90-92%. But clearly, that number, whenever we publish it, is just our best guess on that day, and is only of value for that day. And then things are going to change because the spot price is going to go up and down. So, actually, we found last quarter that, unfortunately, there was a fairly severe reaction to a number that, and many reports misled investors. So we looked at what our competitors do. Nobody else actually publishes that number. And I think it was misleading shareholders.
Okay. Yeah, no, thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Alex Tarantiu from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just two quick questions for you. First, on your energy business CapEx, can you just reconcile for me the spending for Fort Hills? You talk about $170 million to finish the share of the project, but I guess this year 90 in major enhancements and 40 in sustaining. So is that $30 million to be spent, I guess, in 2019? And then also you've got energy new mine development, $195 million. So just wondering again, is that counting for part of what you believe may cost you, your final adjustment to go up to 21.3% and then some on Fort Hills? And then just one quick question on Pend'Oré. Is extending the life of that mine a function of the zinc price, meaning that, costs there are high, but you can keep mining at that mine at these prices, or is it exploration and reserve growth that you're looking for? Thanks.
Okay, we'll go to Tim Watson on the first part on energy, and then Dale on Pend'Oré.
So the your one question with respect to the 195 versus the 170. So the 170 within the total energy business, the 195, but the 170 represents the capital required to complete Fort Hills, and those are items that are associated with completion of the fire protection systems and the thermal insulation systems, as well as completion of deficiency lists associated with trains 2 and 3 to get them commissioned. The major enhancement capital is basically completion of items that have been identified as we've been going through the commissioning of the plant. They require additional work to ensure that we achieve nameplate production through the plant. So those are all items that will be completed in the first part of 2018.
Okay, so they are Fort Hills related, but they're just new spending above and beyond kind of what the original cost expectation was.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way of stating it. As we've closed out the project, we have, as we stated a couple of times, we've seen that cost pressure associated with labor productivity. So this is just the last of the capital required to complete Fort Hills.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Dale?
Yeah, and just on Pondere, it's a combination of both, both the zinc price, obviously, but we still have more work to do, and we'll continue to do that on a year-by-year basis to firm up reserves and associated mine plans. Pondere does provide a very important low-grade, low-iron grade feed source to Trail, and it's a good transportation advantage as well. So we'd like to see that mine continue to keep going forward, but that's going to be on an annual year-by-year basis as we firm up costs.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. The next question is from Ralph Porfidi from Eight Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Don, is the coal business now in a position to materially exceed on sales relative to production? You don't give guidance greater than one quarter out, but we've seen a lot of acceleration and mobilization work done on replenishing inventories, and there's actually been a small net build in Q4. How well built up internally is Teck for that?
Okay, we're looking at a combination of Robin and Rial for that one. I mean, it's a complex moving target, but Robin, you want to start on inventories? Then?
Maybe I'll mention we've got strong clean coal inventories at site right now, so well over 1 million tons of coal. So if we can get it to the port, it's certainly available for sale.
Rial?
And on the market side, Ralph, demand is really good right now. So, and we expect it will continue through 2018, as Don said, you know, with the global synchronized growth that we're seeing with the capacity closures and reduction in China, the increased steel production in the rest of the world too is pulling a lot of coal right now. And that's due to combination of increased demand supported by still some production disruption. And in the European market, the Eastern European mines, a number of Eastern European mines are depleting and closing, so that is also generating additional demand for seaborne coal. But looking out to 2018, the Westshore underperformance is really impacted our ability to deliver coal to the market. As Robin stated, we have a lot of clean coal sitting at our mines that we need to move to ports. And if Westshore is not performing, it's creating a traffic jam on the rail line. So we're really looking forward to improvements on that side because demand is there to move the product. And the mines are in good shape too.
Yep. Okay. Don, I understand it's still early days in the energy business ramp up, but I'd like to get Tech's thoughts on what is sort of an exceedingly wide differential on WCS. Is this a temporary issue or is something more structural? And are you still comfortable with, say, a $15 to $16 a barrel target for, say, 2019?
Interesting question, and it's totally dependent on what happens with pipelines. And obviously that's a sensitive political issue, both here in BC, in Alberta, federally, of course. So we kind of leave it to the politicians to sort it out. Our working assumption is that at least one pipeline will be built, whether it's Trans Mountain, which we believe Trans Mountain will be built, or Keystone XL, or both. If and when that happens, that will reduce differentials. What it gets to is anybody's guess. We actually have a working assumption lower than what you're suggesting. It was last year for quite a while in the sort of $11 range or lower, and we could see it getting back there if two pipelines were built, it would certainly get back there. So I think we're just going to have to see how the politicians sort it out.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Don.
I mean, clearly, I mean, it's costing the country an enormous amount.
Thank you. The next question is from Lucas Pipes from B. Riley FBR. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and thanks for taking my question. I wanted to follow up a little bit on the capital return side. So, for example, on the share repurchases, you've used up 175 out of the 230 million authorization. And I wondered, is it possible for you to give us a way to solve into share repurchases over the course of 2018, for example, if you have a certain level of liquidity? Don, I think you mentioned $6 billion later in the year. That could be sufficient to meet any requirements for QB2. So if you kind of meet that level or exceed it, could then any incremental dollar from there in free cash flow go towards share repurchases? As an example, I would appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
Okay, so our policy on dividends and buybacks was announced last September. We've moved to a flexible structure similar to many of the London-listed companies where there's a base dividend that people can count on year in, year out, no matter what happens in the cycle. That's set at 20 cents. And then each year at the November board meeting, the board would determine what supplemental amount to add in terms of returning capital to shareholders. And in the last one, last November, they decided that half of that would be a cash dividend and half would be a buyback. The reason for that is because we did a lot of shareholder outreach between September and November, asking what shareholders preferred. The majority did say they preferred buybacks. They aren't necessarily buying tech as a mining stock, mining and metal stock for dividends, but for exposure to the key commodities that we produce. And buybacks, of course, mean that there are fewer shares outstanding and there'll be more production per share, more resources per share, and they prefer that. Also, quite a number of international shareholders, U.S. in particular, were in a situation where they were double taxed on cash dividends, and so they preferred buybacks for that reason. On the other hand, having a strong cash dividend yield is very important to a great many shareholders, and so that needed to be an important component. At the November board meeting in 2017, the board decided to split the supplemental dividend half cash and half buyback. Going forward, we anticipate that there will be some proportion buyback again, but we don't know how much that will be. It will depend on how the year goes and what the capital needs are going forward, and that will be assessed in November. Clearly, so far, the year is looking very good. We're off to a very good start in Q1. For example, our average realized coal price in 2017 was 176. As Rael pointed, looks like Q1's quarterly price, as calculated with only 2 weeks to go, is in the 238 range, so we're at a pretty fast start there. Clearly, the zinc price is also significantly higher than what we averaged last year, and is the copper price. So we're set up for a very good year. How that will translate to the board's decision on how much buyback still needs to be seen. In terms of completing what we said we would, we did a lot of it before year end. Thankfully, that was a share price below $30. Then, of course, we're in the blackout period now, so we haven't been able to buy for a while, but we will complete the program by March 31st, as we announced earlier. So I hope that answers your question.
That's helpful. Thank you. And then switching over to your growth projects, I noticed on slide 11 that Quintet didn't make the list, and I just wondered if you could give us a refresher on how you think about that project. I think it's been a little while since you've mentioned it, and it's, to the best of my knowledge, permitted, and interest in coking coal projects has increased. So I wondered how you think about that. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the question, and a lot of people around the table are smiling because I have been thinking about Quintet quite a bit the last couple of months. I had a very good trip to India and China in December and met with quite a number of customers and was impressed by just how strong the demand is. And several customers at very senior levels, chairman and CEO and so on, pointed out that we had a mine on the shelf that we could restart in a fairly relatively short period of time, meaning kind of 14 to 18 months, and could produce as much as 4 million tons a year. And you know, with the coal market being so tight, they'd love to see us do that. As you know, as most shareholders know, I am religious about my belief that in this business you always make more money on price than volume, and that you wouldn't want to bring on production that would tip the market into surplus and cause the price to go down on your other 27 million tons. Mm-hmm. So we've always been very careful about that, and I have said that in terms of Quintet, that we wouldn't bring it back on unless we were very confident that the you know, very, very significant growth in steel production that India is planning is actually going to happen. I think we have concluded that it's certainly a decent proportion of it's going to happen. They have said they want to get to 300 million tons of steel production by 2030. They're a little over 100 million tons today, so that's a big increment, and it would require something like 80 million tons of seaborne coal, which is almost twice as much as all the China imports today. So that's very encouraging. You just wonder, when will it actually occur? Well, what we're seeing with customers is a reasonable amount of it is actually occurring in the near term, and so it may be that we could bring on a Quintet and it wouldn't change the balance in the market. It's something we're going to study very closely, and we are updating things from an engineering point of view to see what the cost would be. Mm-hmm. We likely wouldn't do it unless we had some decent contracts from customers in advance at a floor price that was something that would give us comfortable to invest the capital, and so we'd have those discussions with customers. So this is the kind of thing that would take 2 or 3 months to sort out, but we appreciate the question. It is a possibility, but no one should be putting it in their models just yet.
Well, this is great color. I appreciate that, and good luck.
Thank you.
Patrick, it's Fraser Phillips. We've gone over our time a little here, so I think we'll cut off the Q&A here. I apologize for those still in the queue with questions, but Ron Milos and myself are around all day to answer questions. Just give us a call or send an email, and we'll organize something. And I'll turn it back to Don now for closing comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to make two comments. We are very pleased to have been able to set a new record for operating cash flow. And comparing that to 2011 when we last set a record, I note that we did it this year at an averaged realized coal price of 176. In 2011, the average coal price we realized was 257, so a very significantly lower coal price. And the same is true in copper. 2011, it averaged $4 a pound. And this year, we are around $2.80. Anyway, substantially lower copper and coal prices. And that's a good illustration of just all the hard work that was done over those 6 years to really increase productivity and reduce costs and maximize the efficiency of the asset. So we very, very much want to point that out. And interestingly, we went through the downturn with a 5-point plan where we said, don't dilute the shareholders, don't issue stock while many of our competitors were, don't sell any core assets while many of our competitors were, build something new during the downturn. And sure enough, Fort Hills is finished and now on and doing very well, and reduce costs and maintain a strong balance sheet, reduce debt. We did all that. So that today we've actually already exceeded our operating cash flow record per share, and we're the first ones coming out of the downturn to do that. One of the analysts did some comparisons, and we're well ahead of on a per share basis because we actually have fewer shares outstanding today than we did back in 2011. Last but not least, I do want to highlight that the average coal price for the last 10 years in today's dollars is actually $191 and going higher. And that's a long ways from where most of the analysts are using their coal prices in their models valuing us, $191. And with that, thank you very much for your attention, and we'll look forward to speaking to you in April.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.